Humankind is produced in association with WGBH Boston and the BTS Center and supported by the Humankind Program Fund and a grant from the Henry Luce Foundation.
You can choose to ignore, have a whole bunch of tapes in your head that are telling you to walk away, or this isn't your problem, or what did this person do to do this to themselves, or all the tapes that play in our head that give us permission to walk away or turn away.
A Seattle-based coalition reaches out to homeless people to view them in a more compassionate light and to help. You're listening to Humankind. I'm David Freudberg. At a time when some outsiders, people viewed as the other, are being turned away, a new effort is emerging to welcome the stranger.
We are equal, mutual, co-inhabitants of this earth. We are neighbors together. We only survive together. And when somebody feels this separation, this sense of outsidedness, this fear of the other, that they don't belong, that's where the deep wounding really is.
Kay Eaton is director and lead chaplain of the Mental Health Chaplaincy, founded in Seattle over 30 years ago. They serve a population facing homelessness and addictions and mental illness, a community that is often marginalized. I visited one Seattle site where vulnerable street people can get a meal and find shelter. I was accompanied by social worker Larry Klum.
This is called the Mission.
Union Gospel Mission of Seattle. It started in 1932 during the Great Depression. A place just south of here was called Hooverville, where there were multitudes camped out. People were in dire straits, and churches came together, formed a union, and volunteers would come in here and serve meals. It became essentially a soup kitchen. And then it evolved into more programs, recovery programs, outreach programs. And now we're one of the larger missions in the United States. I think we're the third or fourth largest. We have 13 different buildings around King County.
Here in Seattle?
Yeah, in the Seattle area.
Larry is director of community mental health programs at the Mission. He introduced me to someone he'd met on a street corner about 5 years earlier, a man known as T.Y., which stands for Thomas Young. T.Y. was a professional basketball player in Europe. Now, at age 65, he's hit upon hard financial times, as well as health concerns, including heart problems. He has trouble standing for long periods and wears an oxygen tube, which you'll hear. He often hangs out in Pioneer Square downtown.
I panhandle down there, okay, and I know everybody down there, everybody in the square. Everybody knows T.Y. So I'm the self-proclaimed mayor of Pioneer Square. Yeah, this is true.
But even for a mayor, the streets can be a lonely and cold place. T.Y. says he came to recognize that Larry and his co-worker Ryan Likes truly cared about him.
When I was out there, you know, homeless and whatnot, didn't have nothing, right? Lost my mind behind it. Every now and then, I would pray. And you know something? After I got up off my knees, I felt so good. You know, I really felt good, you know. You know, even though it was a temporary fix, but I found out about that. If I keep praying, it's a permanent fix. And so whenever I got down in a rut, I just prayed. And it still works, you know. And I recommend people to get on the heaven-bound train. You know, I truly recommend it to anybody.
Get on the heaven-bound train.
That's right. That's right. And it picks up all passengers. You know, it don't discriminate, you know. You won't be an illegal alien, you know. That thing that Trump is doing, whatever. Well, this ain't political, but.
So when you interacted with Larry and with Ryan, and they were talking with you and listening to you and they were giving you ideas. Can you describe some of what that was like?
Well, to me, it filled me, you know, because it gave me a sense that someone really cares about me, you know, and they were relentless, you know. I didn't see them one day and saw them again 2 months later, you know. I would see them maybe five times a week, you know, and they were always there asking me, what do you need?
And what would you tell them that you need?
Some socks, you know. Oh, I socks them to death. Oh, boy. You know, they gave me not necessarily guidance, you know, but inner strength, you know, to carry on, you know, because I suffer from depression, you know. And
has that been true for a long time?
What, the depression? Ever since I went through this homelessness ordeal, you know. Yeah, just when I really developed it, you know.
T.Y. has a long history of recurrent major depressive disorder. He has battled poverty, hunger, addiction, and family discord. T.Y. turns to his Christian faith for strength. He told me that today he lives in a decent, small apartment and depends on Social Security. To supplement his income, T.Y. continues to panhandle, which he views as therapy that allows him to be around others. People working with this population are inspired by Reverend Craig Renenbaum, who founded the Mental Health Chaplaincy in Seattle in 1987 and is considered a pathfinder in the field. It highlights the practice of companionship, which emphasizes welcoming, listening to, and walking alongside people who feel estranged. I talked with several chaplains. Here's Kay Eaton.
The person who is suffering has a sense of being on the outside, being marginalized, and that's a fearful place to be because they're not accepted. They don't feel that they're wanted or they're accepted. So creating safe space with that in mind, that welcome, you know, asking a person what they'd like to be called. It may be their given name, it may not be, it may be a street name, but it's the thing that identifies them as a unique person. So that introduction and that naming is an important piece of creating safety. Creating safety for the caregiver, whether it's somebody from the neighborhood who has learned something about companionship, sitting at meal with someone, or whether it's a chaplain who's been educated and knows companionship is really not that important. The key is that there's a mutuality and a respect for one another, regardless of your circumstance. That common dignity is the great equalizer.
People who are in suffering are all around, and they are reaching out to us through our senses.
Reverend Jonathan Neufeld is a community minister at Seattle Mennonite Church in the Lake City section. He coordinates a day center for homeless people there.
You can choose to ignore what your senses are receiving and taking in. You can turn your eye towards and have a whole bunch of tapes in your head that are telling you to walk away, or this isn't your problem, or what did this person do to do this to themselves, or all the tapes that we play in our head that give us permission to walk away or turn away. And companionship tells us that our senses are is actually a point of invitation to perhaps draw closer, to have at least the briefest connection, which acknowledges their existence and their humanity. Whether it's just a simple greeting. And if that encounter is repeated and comes into your sort of your frame again and again, perhaps there might be opportunities for that interaction to develop. but you may also make no assumptions about that. So in the context of our day center, where we bring together people who are volunteers and concerned citizens with people experiencing homelessness, I think the simple introduction of one person to another is the beginning of welcoming the stranger. In the context of our community ministry, we have, you know, neighbors, housed neighbors who volunteer, who come into the day center and sit at table with people and get to know each other by name. The best outcome for me as a person working in a neighborhood is knowing that those volunteers in the neighborhood who now have gotten to know each other, gotten to know people experiencing homelessness by name, now walk in this neighborhood knowing people and being known. And when you are otherwise walking in a neighborhood where you don't know your neighbor by name, that you have never met and never had the chance to even make the basic human connection of knowing who you're with, you can walk in a neighborhood with a lot of fear and uncertainty about what you're encountering, especially when you see someone who is suffering. But when you've had that initial chance to make a human connection, you walk in your neighborhood it transforms your sense of safety in that space because you now know each other.
Why do we fear the person who's suffering?
It feels out of control. It feels like unpredictable. It feels you might fear something of what you see in yourself possible, revealed in someone's suffering or response to suffering around them.
The struggles of people dealing with homelessness and mental health challenges can be aggravated by how society treats these folks. Beverly Hartz works for the Veterans Administration Puget Sound Healthcare System in Seattle, where she serves as a chaplain in the inpatient mental health unit.
Many times I find that the stranger is a stranger to himself or to herself. And coming beside them in this welcoming, this hospitality, where we stand next to and bear witness and gaze into the eyes of this person, we start to watch them perceive their own identity differently.
Perceive themselves differently.
Exactly. We, most of us, are lucky enough to have many things that ground us into our identity. You know, our families, our friends, our vocations, our jobs, our homes. And when we find people that have severed ties with those grounding moments, they often lose themselves in the process too. So if we can look at them, not as the other, but as ourselves, if I can see myself in you, then we start to create a reality, actually for both of us. It's not a one-way street. It's a gift that travels in both directions.
So that's a very deep insight, to be able to see yourself in the person that you're looking at, that you're working with, that you're trying to help in some way. Can you explain what it means to see yourself in them? Because outwardly, they may be very different from you.
I think we move through phases of that kind of awareness. We may pass someone on the street that's disheveled and unhoused, and we say, well, that's not me. That's not me, and that never could be me. We may move to the step of saying, there but for the grace of God go I. But I think the final and most important step we have to take is to say, there I am. That is me.
So when you say, there I am, that is me, that's a deep identification with their humanity?
Yes. We are one. We fight against that every day. We do the best we can to create the illusion that we're all separate, but we are not. I believe it's very true that whatever is happening to that person that I am seeing, that I'm bearing witness to, in many ways it's happening to me also.
And are you noticing in yourself when you are in dialogue with that other person those parts of you that are being touched, those buttons in you that are being pushed?
Absolutely. You have to be aware of that. We do a great deal of training of becoming aware of our own triggers and our own buttons.
We're exploring ways of welcoming the stranger among the homeless population and others who feel marginalized. You're listening to Humankind. I'm David Freudberg. To learn more and to obtain an audio download or CD of this segment on welcoming the stranger, please visit humanmedia.org. The Seattle metro area has recently experienced a surge in homelessness. Analysts attribute the spike to inadequate affordable housing in an attractive city. Powerhouses like Amazon, Microsoft, and Starbucks are headquartered there and put upward pressure on the cost of living. People at the margins may find themselves no longer able to hold on. Here's T.Y. recorded at the Mission. Again, you'll hear his oxygen tube.
Let me tell you something about me, man, you know. In the beginning, man, you know, I'm big, black, and ugly, okay?
Well, I think you're big and black, but I don't think you're ugly. I think you might have that part wrong.
Well, I'm big, black, and very handsome then. But sometimes I would cry like a baby. I mean, just cry, you know. It hurts so much, you know, and some people lets it out in different ways, you know, maybe do drugs or whatever. But I used to cry, man.
What was it that hurt so much at that point?
Well, a lot of it was loneliness. You know, sometimes you sink low where you think you don't have a purpose. But sad days, man. No.
And are those in the past for you?
I plan for them to be in the past for me, you know. I'm going to do everything in my powers, you know, to keep them back there.
How would you describe your relationship today with God?
You know, I talk to him as often as I can. You know, I might pray some 8-9 times a day, you know. Call him up, you know. You just got to talk to him, you know. Tell him what you need, you know. You know. Tell him what you need, you know. And he might not give you what you want, but he'll give you what you need. You know. That's real talk to him. He'll give you what you need.
So what is your part of that bargain? If God gives you what you need, and you can rely on that, what do you need to do?
Faith and honor God.
Larry Klum, the social worker who connected me to T.Y., co-founded the Seattle Clubhouse, a psychiatric rehabilitation program that helps clients find meaningful work and relationships. Larry has also served as an emergency room social worker.
Foundational to welcoming the stranger is changing my whole paradigm of how we address human need. In the ER, in the hospital, in the medical field, we think about the fundamental problem being our mortality and addressing that. Yet, maybe the fundamental problem actually is isolation and separation from others in society, and we really see that with mental illness. And so when we think of people in those terms, it's much easier to approach in the sense that I'm not here to do something for this person as much as I'm here to be with the person.
So to abandon the goal of trying to fix them?
To fix, yeah, to have a solution. And I think that causes a hesitancy in many of us to approach because we think we're not experts. This person's having symptoms here that are beyond me. I'm just a shelter worker. What can I do? Yet if we think about it in terms of this person is very lonely, and this is something we've all experienced in our life, it's much easier to approach with the idea of just being with, being alongside the person and doing life. What that does is it just transforms that person. They come out of their shell. For the first time, maybe they're doing things that they haven't done in years, and they're more willing to talk then at a certain point about getting help. But again, that's not the goal. The goal is just to get to know the person and do life with them, things that they enjoy doing. And what we've seen is lives transformed, many stories, just from taking that bent, that angle on approaching, on welcoming the stranger, rather than what can we do to help this person, fix this person.
Reverend Beverly Hartz, in her work as a mental health chaplain at the VA Puget Sound, cares for people who may be deeply depressed or struggling with bipolar disorder or substance abuse and other conditions. She's also an educator of spiritual care professionals.
In our clinical pastoral education programs, which board-certified chaplains must take, we are very much being trained not so much on techniques or skills, but believing that we are the technique. Our presence needs to be so in the now and profound that we are the toolbox that is meeting the other and welcoming the other.
And is that exhibited through your demeanor?
Oh, so many things. Of course, your demeanor, all the nonverbals that we know about, the way we're using our body, our gaze, our tone of voice. Of course, it's that. But it's also something that is inside of us. The very core of our essence becomes involved. And in my language, I would call that the spiritual part of myself that is trying to touch the spiritual part or the soul of the person I'm with. That is more than just physical. That's physical, emotional, psychological. It's the totality of the human experience is involved in that.
So does this take hard inner work? Is this a difficult state to achieve?
Well, it's not easy. And it takes a dedicated and profound commitment to become this kind of person.
If you're developing that consciousness to be present with others in a kind of authenticity that radiates from your spiritual center and hopes to touch theirs, does that seep into other areas of your life than just this work?
Absolutely. It has to. And I would go back to Martin Buber and his I-thou relationships versus I-it relationships, where my interactions with someone are more transactional in an I-it relationship. I'm checking out my groceries, and I'm my relationship with the clerk that's checking me out. That can be a transactional relationship. That can be an it. I-it relationship. Nobody would think anything about that. But I believe that once you're in this kind of work, you want to minimize your transactional interactions with others. And you want to start to see everyone as a thou.
That every interaction at base is a spiritual encounter.
I see you. I value you. You and I are one.
And that mutuality derives in part from an understanding that all people, to some extent, have in the course of life experienced emotional dilemmas and wounds. The journey of healing is how we adjust and recover from these injuries.
One of my first encounters in the VA on the inpatient mental health unit was with a veteran who had been admitted for homicidal ideation. Very, very large man. And had the power to be intimidating, but wasn't. But he was being discharged and requested to see a chaplain. So what he wanted to talk about was the fear that he had of being back on the streets and would he hurt someone? That was his, really the deepest concern of his. Would he end up hurting someone when he really didn't want to? And so we talked about that for a while. But before we parted, I blessed his hands to be used for helping and healing rather than hurting. And he broke down and started crying, this huge, enormous bear of a man. And that's when I think of that in-between space. It's a strange mathematical dilemma where 1 + 1 = 3. It's unquantifiable in that moment. There's no name for it. I mean, we're not talking necessarily, you know, church, Bible study. We're not talking the traditional method of expressing your faith, spiritual disciplines. You know, we're looking at something else that comes from deep inside of them.
Beverly Hartz works for the Veterans Administration Puget Sound Healthcare System in Seattle, where she serves as a chaplain in the inpatient mental health unit. You're listening to Humankind. I'm David Freudberg. Editorial assistance from David Cruz, Andrew Andresko, Ken Rogers, and Kathy Graham. Webmaster Brian K. Johnson. Special thanks to Connie Goldman and Tony Buck. Our program is presented by Human Media. Program development provided by Chart Media.
To purchase a CD copy of this program, please call 1-800-5-LISTEN. That's 1-800-5-LISTEN. Or visit our website, where you can also obtain an audio download of this and our other programs and can hear selected episodes free. You can access free written materials related to this program as well. Our web address is humanmedia.org. Again, if you'd like to purchase a CD copy of Humankind by phone, please call 1-800-5-LISTEN, and our web address is humanmedia.org.
And you can subscribe to our new series, The Spiritual Care Podcast. It's free at Apple Podcasts and elsewhere. This segment, Welcoming the Stranger, is Humankind Program number 262.
The executive producer is David Freudberg. This is Humankind.